Tabletop Radio Hour, your podcast for everything tabletop. My name's Zach, and this week I've got the regular crew. I've got Mark, and I've got Logan. Mark, how are you today?
I'm doing okay. How you doing, Logan?
Doing well, thanks. Zach, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty well myself. Thank you. Well, gentlemen, thank you for joining me here today for another wonderful talk show episode.
Woot woot.
woot woot. we are recording this on Memorial Day weekend, so happy Memorial Day, everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think today we are going to kind of focus the topic around a kind of military theme. Thank you, Mark, for helping us bring together this wonderful theme this week.
Looking at the calendar, yeah. It just came to me. I don't know how.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's good.
I think we're going to preface this entire episode with none of us have served, and none of us are veterans, but so this is kind of an outside look on just on the overall topic here.
So feel free to write in with your corrections on correcting us on anything.
Yeah, don't hate us too much. This is this is a completely outside opinion here. But we're gonna talk about some things. Does anybody want to kick us off, Mark? Since you brought the topic here, do you have anywhere to jump us off here?
Maybe a great place to start is something, you know, we were kind of getting our bearings before we started recording, and, you know, the observation came up that all of role-playing kind of came from the world of miniature wargaming. And, you know,
right.
So role-playing kind of was an approach to get away from some of that more military. And I think, you know, our discussion is kind of maybe how does it kind of come back around? How does some of that linger? How does that kind of mesh with that?
And how do we use those themes without having to go back to that tabletop?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. So absolutely. I think that's the kind of core.
We do see some, you know, more military themed role playing systems out there. Mm-hmm. Mark, you sent us the Mashed RPG.
Right.
M-A-S-H-E-D, Mashed.
Yeah.
For copyright reasons, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's not an official tie into the franchise, but let's face it. Korean War Mashed.
Yeah, exactly. It's like your 007 remake, which
right,
is...
Right.
Classified. It's like 007 with the serial numbers.
770. It's different. It's not 007. Yes. It's 770.
770.
Totally different.
Absolutely. But yeah, it's an interesting thing to take a look at, because, you know, not being a veteran, just, you know, taking a look at this and you know, hopefully getting an idea of some of the experiences, you know, through these stories and whatever.
Sure. It'll be kind of interesting to kind of look at the differences that various games and for that matter, movies and literature have different approaches to things like, you know, military, how they look at things on a very base level. And again, while we were talking this, I made the comparison between Star Trek and Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Star Trek does you know, very kind of relatively strict military structure and ranks and roles and procedures. Whereas
because it's all about Starfleet. It's all about
if you do something weird, you can actually get court-martialed. There's actual like process in there to follow certain rankings and what that does within the system.
Yes, exactly. Whereas as opposed to Star Wars, they throw some ranks in there just for kind of flavor, but...
Yeah, I mean, some of that is because, you know, all the movies have shown they're following the characters and their interactions with their buddies and their friends, and it's, like, ancillary to really deal with any sort of military structure from what we've seen in the movies.
Absolutely.
You could do that in a Star Wars game, but it's, again, not built into the system. So it's like the system is not really looking towards that. It's not supporting that gameplay.
Right.
Well, you know, you're talking about Star Wars until you get into this this new kind of Skywalker.
Oh, the new trilogy?
The new trilogy.
Yeah.
When you see, like, Leia as the leader of basically the rebellion. So that's kind of the only direct involvement the heroes had with that kind of hierarchy of, you know, of ranking. But before that, it really didn't matter. It didn't seem.
No, not really. Not much. I have a question for Logan.
Yeah.
Now we played, what was it, Edge of Empire?
Yeah, we did a little bit of an intro game for Edge of the Empire from Fantasy Flight Games.
Now, another one of that is Age of Rebellion, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So now, the core system is broken into three versions, basically based on what you're focused on. So Edge is like you're a bunch of the rogues and criminals and scoundrels and scum and villainy. Well, not villainy, but scum. And then you've got Age of Rebellion, which is all about being in the rebellion and that more military structure and how do you work with that structure or that that team. And then Force and Destiny, of course, is focused around more of the Force users. Not like the High Jedi Council, but more like you're a bunch of exiles trying to figure out what this Force thing is and why do you keep doing weird mystical stuff.
Now, I was about to say, I would imagine Age of Rebellion would be the one that had where they started to introduce more rank structure.
Very much
but
so.
As you said that, I realized probably the Force users are also dealing with a form of rank structure.
Very
in
rarely.
In terms of masters and masters and apprentices and that sort of.
They do have setting books for Clone Wars out right now, but as far as settings released, it is very much around A New Hope and that sort of era. People, of course, done their own games wherever they want, but like, if you have a mentor, you're probably not going to have them for long, or it's going to be a very small thing. It's very much like we are lost in trying to figure out how to do the Force stuff. Each of the books has a kind of like a sub theme that deals with probably the emotional pressure of that style of player. So, sorry, that's very vague, but like in Force and Destiny, we're going to deal with morality. Good side, bad side, light side, dark side. So the things you do will start changing your morality structure and you can start slipping towards the dark side or you can pull yourself out and redeem yourself. Edge of the Empire is going to deal with obligation. So it's very much like, yeah, you're in debt, you owe a hut, somebody's hunting you. You're trying to hide from all that stuff, but it still comes up. Those things bother you. Those things show up. Boba Fett shows up looking to collect. Age of Rebellion is all about duty. And your duty to the rebellion and to the tasks that you've been given. And so as you do things, instead of it being like a thing that's kind of crunching on you, like obligation or a thing where you have to try and balance, like morality, duty is as I'm doing things and as I'm succeeding, the organization is trusting me more. And so it almost represents you going up the ranks because you have more resources available to you. You're at a higher level within that duty structure to help support whatever you're trying to do in the game.
So that's which is basically a playing a rank structure, but that's a very interesting approach to it. I like that.
Yeah, it's a very fun way to go. Not as many people play that side because I think they're very focused on being either a scoundrel or a Jedi.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, hey, who doesn't want to be? I mean, that's awesome.
Exactly.
But that rank structure is very much part of the Age of Rebellion side of things.
Okay.
And I think some of what we'll talk about today could help people with that because a lot of people are like, rank. That means somebody in the group's going to be ordering me around. That sucks. And that's not how roleplay has to be with rank or rankings, you know?
Sure.
It can be a very fun thing. It can be a very enjoyable and engaging thing and really add to the story you're trying to tell.
Well, I've talked about it numerous times.
Yep.
My introduction to roleplaying was playing Star Trek.
Yeah.
And first group I had, the guy who played the captain was a Vietnam vet who had flown a helicopter in Vietnam. Uh-huh, so he was very familiar with, you know, the military structure and kind of helped everyone play that a lot and, you know, helped bring out a lot of the flavor of that kind of situation.
Right, to really get a closer understanding to an actual ranking structure.
Right. So playing that kind of military rank is very familiar to me. It's something that I've had a lot of experience with, at least within the kind of Star Trek realm, which, like I say, I know that's still a little bit loose, but I think it is out there. I think you're right. It is something that can be fun. It can be. I've had some really good experiences with it. I've also had some bad experiences with it. But
yeah,
you know,
I think that's part of that throws off people is, you know, we know that Hollywood's going to put out a view on how military stuff works that's never quite accurate, and so that definitely skews what we think about it. But
true,
I think, you know, one of the misconceptions talking to a friend of mine who has served. Is that there isn't this like lockstep following of military orders as much as there is a understanding of how each individual, you know, has their own strength and how a good leader, a good military leader is going to try and find that strength and help them go towards that. Of course, there's times where they're like, you do this thing because I freaking told you.
Sure.
But it's less, you know, Pelican Brief, you know, sort of like screaming at someone, you will do this thing. You know, there's less of that involved.
Well,
I immediately think of the scene the bunk search scene in Forrest Gump.
Oh yeah.
Mm.
Yes.
Just getting the commander getting like inches from your face.
Right.
True.
Yeah, well, basic's I wonder very how different much than that military.
That's true. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. I wonder how much of that is also era, you know, varies with era.
Mm-hmm.
When I was on the Save for Half podcast, we talked about the Privateers and Gentlemen role-playing game, which was an old 70s, but that was based very much on Napoleonic British Navy. Mm-hmm. So you had the master and commander, Captain Bligh, and in that sort of situation. That is, you know, that everything you've read about that has been very, very strict military discipline type, really tight. And I think over the years, the armed forces have gotten a lot better about being more psychological about getting the best out of their people rather than just, you know, putting their foot down. So I think I think some of that has just evolved and it changed with the era.
Yeah. It's different. Probably going to be, you know, in a you are in the military versus you are drafted during a war. You know, there's going to be a different attitude.
Great between point. The two. Very good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what are you doing? Are you in the middle of the front lines? You know, with the bombs falling. You know, that is a case where, you know, they don't want you stopping and asking questions. You're told to do something. Yeah.
You got
to
do it.
They're probably much more
ready
to do it. But yeah, when you're back, you know, sitting in the barracks talking about stuff and you know, there's going to be a different dynamic based on that as well.
Right. Absolutely.
And that's sometimes hard, too. I think, you know, we were talking about this beforehand, how, you know, often when there is some form of rank, that it's you have a ranking and there are people who are subordinate to you, but in your role play group, in your party, you're probably all peers. You're probably all about the same or close enough, you know, that you're the same. And in military, you know, there's often that separation between the enlisted versus the officers. But that rarely comes up in a role play situation because most of you all are going to be officers.
True.
You know? Okay, yeah, then, you know, something to bring up there is a role-playing game that does do that is Star Trek, you know? The captain
you
is...
You can be an ensign or something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you can be an ensign, and then obviously the captain is of higher rank than a lot of the bridge crew.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So you do have that kind of opposite ends of the spectrum, you know, where you see Picard interacting with Wesley Crusher.
Sure.
No, it's not like you don't interact, but you don't like fraternize. You don't do. There's certain things you just don't do together, you know.
Well, again, you know, Star Trek is kind of loose with it. You had Chief O'Brien, who was an enlisted man. And he might not have been in on the poker games with the characters, but he became a pretty central character.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
But, you know, one of the interesting things I found, especially with Star Trek, it seems like there's been this, and I've seen it in several of the different versions, the captain character seems to be held really above a lot of the rest. And I've seen in numerous versions, they say the captain should be an NPC because that prevents any one character from having too much power.
Mm.
But I've always had a problem with that because I feel like then you have an NPC making all the moral decisions and stuff.
Which then, you know, it turns into
the
GM, because the GM is the one controlling.
Right, you've taken
it so
away
the GM
some of the
can
players.
Control what they're doing, and you have to go do the things, which can be fun, but it does eventually grate.
Well, and then, but then, whatever the rest of the group is, whoever's the first officer is still the one in charge. So you haven't accomplished anything. You've taken away player agency without really accomplishing anything. You still are going to have one player who's outranks the others in one way or another. So I've always found that kind of an interesting observation, or it seemed like an attempt to do something that I don't think really does what it's meant to, if that makes sense.
Interesting. I think that's a good point to look at, though. Like, right there, I'm going to kind of segue that. Like, if you see, you know, ranking in a game, maybe make sure you read what they mean by their rankings in that game, because it might not be what you expect. You know, captain doesn't mean captain across the board. It doesn't mean I control and am the best at everything on this ship. You know, in 7C, it talks about the captain, particularly on a military vessel, might not be the most experienced sailor. They might have just some understanding of sailing. But, like, the ship's master is the best sailor. The captain is just the one who's controlling the military forces. They might be the one who ultimately decides certain things, but if it involves actually, like, what the ship needs, it ain't the captain. Which is an interesting power dynamic, because then you kind of have two heads, sort of thing.
Well, it really is, because in a lot of the mechanics, the game mechanics of games that do have military structure, I've noticed that they tend to kind of skew things so that the person playing the captain is a weaker character than the subordinates, and that helps balance things, I think. Usually, the goal is, of course, to balance things and make that captain character rely more on the other players. And another thing, a speech I've always given when I go into a game that has leadership, especially Star Trek, is my point of view as the game master. I always perceive the person playing the captain as kind of a co-game master.
Okay.
They are partially responsible for delegating and making sure that they don't become the "this is just me" game.
Right.
And you know, so they do kind of push a lot of the, you know, they have the briefing room scenes where you get ideas from everybody. You have you know, those sort of things, and it also helps, I think, especially with a situation like Star Trek. There are different ranks, but everyone has a very specific job that is separate from the rank.
Yeah, because you know, the more that I'm listening to the separate sides of this conversation, the more I'm thinking, oh, you know, Picard probably doesn't know shit about engineering.
Right?
He tells engineering to do something.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, and if you're a good leader, you should be able to do that. That's not my thing. My thing is to make sure I know what everybody else's thing is and help them do their thing.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Picard's thing is fencing.
Yeah. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, if the adventure is about fixing the warp drive, then that's going to focus on Geordi. He's going to be the star of that scene.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And, you know, Patrick Stewart's taking the weekend off. So that's...
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's something that you got to focus on, too, when you have the sort of structure.
Yeah, and something that comes to mind, you know, thinking in this same flavor, I've recently rewatched The Orville. So, basically, Star Trek copy that's comedy-based.
Sure.
And they run into a lot of situations where maybe they send a team planet side and something happens that that they are in a tough position. The captain is in a tough position where their higher ups at you know, quote unquote, Starfleet are telling them they can't intervene. They can't do something.
Sure.
And you're in that tough position where it's like, if I don't do something, a member of my crew's going to die. If I do, you know, if I, you know, it's so it's this weird struggle of, you know, these morality.
Oh, yeah. Morality questions. Just following orders sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a very Star Trek thing. Prime directive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Type thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just an interesting thing to think about because, you know, thinking about consequences in role-playing games mm-hmm. as well. It's something that, you know, Mark and I have talked about kind of briefly back and forth about consequences. So, like, maybe setting a time limit if they're in a very tough, high-octane situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where something actually does have a time limit. And if these players are just goofing around and not taking stuff seriously, there are these consequences. So something negative does happen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's definitely a next level sort of thing when you're running any game is thinking about consequences in a more unique way. You know, people are like, oh, no, don't kill my character. I'm like, killing your character is like the easiest thing I could possibly do. There are things yes. worlds worse that I could do to your character.
Yes.
Cool. You can keep your character. They're alive. How do you like being in jail for the next 12 years? That's rough, right? That's a different consequence that most people don't want to think about or deal with. And the easy consequence is save or die. You know, you messed up, now your character's dead. But, like, there's a lot of other consequences that can go on. Not directly your character getting hurt, but somebody else's character getting hurt. Something happening to your character that permanently changes them. Et cetera, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, going back to my first role-playing experience, played Star Trek, and they went off on this, you know, D&D thing, phasers blazing, and you know, having this we gain XP by killing things kind of...
Mindset.
So the second game I ran was a court-martial for them having to justify their... And... You know, that was kind of where everybody kind of stopped and had this, oh, this is a different kind of game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, something that you can deal with if you talk about beforehand, but, you know, sometimes you don't know what they don't know or you don't know, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, actually it turned out, you know, it was really kind of fun, you know, playing out the military, the military tribunal, and I included a way for them to save the day and redeem themselves. Nice. So, you know, I mean, it wasn't just a, you know,
it wasn't trying to punish the players. It was trying to help them understand the military structure that they're in. That's cool.
Help them understand. And it was just a great, it made for a great story. It made for a great follow up. And it was, you know, everybody had a great time. It, you know, it was a good thing. But yeah, that's exactly it. That idea of there's stuff out there too. And another side to this, you know, we're just talking about military structure within the group, but there can be military structure outside the group influencing things too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we talked... Paranoia is a game that we played. It's not military ranks as such, but they have a very clear, based on color scheme, of social ranks. And...
Yeah, and it's you know, that futuristic...
Yeah.
You're a part of a separate sector in this bigger picture place.
Right.
But clearance level is kind of the key word there.
Exactly.
Yeah, you've got a different clearance level than people, so you don't know something that a higher clearance level knows.
Yeah, you're restricted on what you're allowed to know. But in that case, the player party is usually all of the same level. In that case, the conflict with other ranks or levels comes externally. To the party as a whole, and that...
yeah, and if you think about it, a lot of systems kind of have that. A lot of genres, more or less, kind of have that.
Sure,
you can say this something similar with the spy genre, the espionage genre,
spy genre, police procedural. You always have the grumpy chief that's, you know, yelling at the guys. Yeah, there's a lot of opportunities for having that external rank structure or
yeah, rank conflict, I guess.
Rank conflict, yeah. And I think that's probably it. If you're going to try for conflict, you want that to be external from the party more than internal.
Sometimes, yeah. Yes. Sometimes it's kind of fun to have that conflict within a party, but you got to make sure the party is all on the same page with that. Yeah. You are very, very clear that this is character conflict, not player conflict.
Not player.
And you probably are with a very experienced group. You all know each other. You all know kind of what you're expecting from each other, and that's kind of fun to give each other crap about this, you know, in a different way.
Right.
You're looking for that sort of play experience. It's not like a default just jump into a random game experience.
Sure. Sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you get to play with the same group of people, you get to you get to know them better. So, you know, at the time you play the game, you understand that it's not because of the player, it's because of the character.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
So.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's, we're talking a lot about rank with this, you know, military structure stuff, and there are a lot of games that do involve some form of rank, whether it's within the party or just within the game itself. But what are some other military themes we could talk about, too? Things that, you know, are very specifically a military feeling in a game, not just like a fight, or not just like, you know, I am the captain, whatever else. Now, what are some other military themes? One I had talked about was, like, the conflict of a war scene, a very intense environment.
Yeah.
How do you keep war interesting without it feeling like, you know, how do you go through hell without feeling like you're in hell? Like, how do you have very intense moment with everything blowing up and, you know, people dying around you and a huge fight going on with it seeming dramatic and not like really dragged out or really just painful?
You know, it's funny. I played a kind of a one-shot game of Twilight 2000, you know, years ago. And I don't know if it was at a comic shop or convention or something, but I remember kind of coming out of that and saying, "Yeah, I would move to Canada to avoid playing that again."
Oh wow!
You know, just had that.
That is a review. So tell the viewers, since Twilight 2000 is not really, you know, in the common mind right now, what was its theme at that time?
I personally don't know what Twilight 2000 is.
I played it once, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah, this was a long time ago for me as well. You know, got to be early 80s. You know, it was a very military. I don't remember if it was actually Vietnam or if it might have been Vietnamish. Fairly straightforward. But actually, no, I take that back. I think it was more. God, what was that movie where the Russians were attacking the U.S. and
Red Dawn.
Red Dawn. Yeah, I think it was kind of Red Dawn-ish.
Okay.
But you set up a very, you know, paramilitary type of group to wage guerrilla warfare on
people on an opposing faction.
Yeah.
You know, and in like, Red Dawn's case, you know, an invading army.
Sure. Yeah, but like I said, it was early 80s, so it was very Vietnamish.
Yeah, yeah, very modern military side of things, but with a post-apocalyptic twist on it. So like that Red Dawn situation, your country's being invaded, how do you fight back? How do you be that militia?
Right.
But trying to also lean into that military side of things. You might have been part of the military when that happened. You know, what's the aftermath of World War III?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it mixed in some civilian characters that were kind of sucked into the military groups and, you know, type of thing. But yeah, it was very, you know, you definitely had a lot of that flavor of, you know, Full Metal Jacket and Apocalypse Now. And, you know, those were definitely kind of the templates that they were using for it. So you had a lot of that tension. You had a lot of that something could happen at any time, and being on, you know, pins and needles through the whole thing. And it definitely brought the tension. And yeah, if that's what you're looking for, that
I think if you have to go in knowing what you're about to experience.
Yeah.
You know, you're about to experience tough times. You're about to experience loss. It's going to be kind of hell, and you go in with the understanding of that, and kind of that's why you play that game. You want to You know, you want to role play that. You want to experience that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very much down to that session zero moment where you got to be able to explain to everybody at the table and everybody kind of also buy in. What is it that we're going to be expecting here? What sort of themes? How rough is it going to be? What do you expect as far as the gameplay? Very much so. I did a game not too long ago with a long running group where we were doing Jedi escaping from Order 66. And so I told them going into it, we're going to be going into the end of the Clone Wars. We're going to be walking through a bunch of that, you know, final battles. And then the Order is going to be called. You don't know when. And it's all going to break out. And we're going to see if you guys survive it. And it was a very intense set of games. It ended up being much more of them sneaking about and almost more spy-like in the end. Because they're very, you know, smart. but it was a very intense sort of feeling where they're constantly being hunted. And we had many times where we're taking time to check in with each other and be like, hey, are we okay? Is this cool? Like, are you still having fun with this? Because it was kind of rough, you know? Instead of being like, hey, you're being big damn heroes, it's like, yeah, you just saved that kid. And everybody still wants to kill you because you are the villain somehow, even though you did the heroic thing. Like, that's a very intense feeling.
Well, and you think about that type of situation, that type of tense warfare, where, you know, step on a mine, you know, a sniper comes out of nowhere. You don't get saving throws. You don't get, you know, roll to see if you observe that. You know, a lot of those types of things to get a gritty realism is going to be very dark.
Very dark, yeah.
And especially with the physical settings as well, you know, the visuals you can imagine with these, like, let's say World War II Germany, which was absolutely brutal. You know, it's crazy how vivid these, you know, this imagery can be, just because you know, we do have some footage.
Sure.
And you know, some visual inspirations, I guess, to pull from on the World Wide Web.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, it's half for, you know, that visual experience, half for that, you know, military experience, of course.
Yeah.
I think it definitely comes down to making sure you're talking with your people. You know what you're getting into. You know what sort of game it is, and be very clear about that. You know, you as the GM, you got to make sure you're talking with everybody. It's on you to make sure about that. You can't wait for them to ask.
Yeah, because there is a lot of range that you can have. You could have that kind of, you know, like I say, Full Metal Jacket, you know, Deer Hunter type of experience, or you could have something like Kelly's Heroes, which is a little bit more light World War II flavor. A little more heroic and light.
A little more lighthearted.
Yeah. So, you know, those flavors are there to give some variety and texture. And I think that's going to be necessary. Even if you go dark, you have to have some light as well. You can have the tense scenes, but you've got to flavor it with a lot of variety.
Yeah, it's definitely down to that pacing. You can have that intensity. Yeah. You can start it off with dropping that grenade and everybody's going to have to scramble, and that's great. But do allow those moments where they can find a moment of beauty and a moment just to relax and to have some peace before, of course, you take that away from them.
yeah. And those become so powerful then.
Yes, they do.
You know?
Yeah.
Thinking Lord of the Rings, you know, dark, 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 and they come across like one flower, and it just has so much meaning then. And
that's a great example.
Something I definitely did not think about before right now is the role playing game Flying Circus. Which is Logan. If you haven't seen it, Mark and I have been talking about it for a little bit.
Sure.
It's a kind of World War II themed. World War One themed kind of fighter pilot game. So you play pilots in this World War One era.
Yeah, fantasy genre.
Yeah, fantasy
mechs,
of course.
Okay.
And it you know, it does kind of balance that, you know, you have combat, you have more social sides of things as well.
Right. You can be back at the officer's mess and have interactions and, you know, dances and stuff, but then you're off, you know, in the actual war the next day.
Yeah, I think it kind of, you kind of have to do it. It's kind of like Blades in the Dark has that downtime phase. I think it's I think it's just kind of the same thing with the Flying Circus. You kind of went after the tension of your mission, you have to kind of go in and have your relaxing, socializing type of thing.
Yeah, there's an older role-play game, like Turn of the Millennium, called Godlike, that dealt with World War II, but kind of leaning into the super soldier side of things. Which was kind of neat, because it was I don't remember the role-play system. It was kind of D20 adjacent, kind of reminded me of Rolemaster. But you are probably some sort of super soldier that has some sort of enhancements. The problem is they still use the same shooting system for shooting an NPC as it does for you. You're rolling percentile dice, and you have just as much, you have probably, you know, it's probably like 5 times out of 6 you're going to miss. But you could still hit, and it could be some know-nothing private that happens to just get the right shot, and it ricochets, and it kills the general. Because that's how their role system works, so you could die at any point, even though you're kind of like a superhero within World War II. That's a very different theme behind it, because it's like you have to almost go in and expecting, you know, that you're gonna have to change to a different character, or just don't get attached.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I might like to give that a read.
Yeah, yeah, check it out. Godlike. Yeah, it's very interesting. It's the whole, like, when Hitler went to the Olympics in, like, 38 or 39.
Oh, yeah.
As, like, Nazi Germany, he showed off the Fliegmann, the flying man, and this dude who's just literally, like, Superman flying around. And that changed the entirety of the world.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Yeah, that's really cool. I think a point we need to bring up is, you know, there are all these war role-playing games. How do we do something that's strategic enough with all this combat without it just feeling like a miniatures game?
Well, it seems like that's kind of been the ongoing battle of role-playing games since they started. You have your story of the game that was way too strategic, and you know, things have started to evolve to become more narrative, but you know, a game like Rolemaster is still very strategic. You know, a lot of things where you know, that use the miniatures and get the miniatures out, use those for combat, could be much more tactical.
I think the difference is knowing what you're in there to play and knowing what the rules are there for. Matt Colville's a guy I like listening to a lot for different D&D stuff, because he's got an interesting take on a lot of that stuff. And one of his mindsets is that war is kind of like the steady state of humanity. If war is not happening in your setting, why not? What is causing that peace? And why is that tension in there? Which is really interesting, because it's like it's always kind of on the horizon. Something's going to happen. So why is it not at war right now? Or if it is at war, what's the reason? What could be peace, you know, that sort of stuff. And so he goes into a lot of that tension there. But he also likes to talk about the fact that, like, just because it's tactical doesn't mean it's not role play, and that there shouldn't be a mutually exclusive side of those. Because if you're a fighter character, you could define a lot of who you are based on how you do in combat and why you do certain things or don't do certain things. And that could be a great vignette to show your mindset and your psychology as a person. So when you are using the system of combat, which is the start of any sort of role play game, why we had to have a game side of it was, instead of being like, I shot you, no you didn't, yes I did, and arguing like little children with cap guns, you had to have some way to determine whether you hit something or not. And that's why we have a system involved, is there's a randomizer there so we can actually determine, you know, did it work or not. So if you are so focused on just the rules, because maybe you're not as comfortable with that side of things, the combat side of things, and so therefore you really haven't tried to focus on it and the squares of movement and making sure I got my abilities, that you're forgetting that this is also a moment that this character is going through where stuff's, you know, blowing up and their friend just got hurt. And what are they going to do about that? Not what is the ability that you're going to do with that? What is the, you know, action? But like, what are you feeling in that moment? And how can you use that tension to actually express more of your character? Yeah, so I think that's a different focus.
It is. Well, I mean, 7C is kind of an example of that too, the fighting system.
Yeah, very much so.
There is, you know, it's very narrative, but it's also very much a strategy game in terms of figuring out which swordsman moves you're going to use at any given time or in any given situation.
Or if not a swordsman, just what are you going to do to change the situation? You know, you can be a non-swordsman and still have as much or more effect upon a fighting scene based on how you can change what's happening.
Excellent point. Yeah.
That's always something I've wanted to try. You know, be build a character that has zero combat related skills.
Yep.
And you know, seeing what interesting things I can do during combat scenes to influence the situation.
True.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing to think about. 'Cause you've got, you know, the people who are directly in combat, but you know, think about it. We've also got the field medics.
Mm-hmm.
We've also got tacticians. We've got radio men who are just running around trying to, you know, get communication around to the battlefield, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you really don't think of all the different moving parts of what is essentially an army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
you know?
Especially if you've been watching, like, The Bad Batch, Star Wars animated, that's a tangent off of Clone Wars. No spoilers. Or I'm going to try and keep away from spoilers, so sorry. You do see a specialized team that's in a warfare setting, but each one has their own specialty outside of being able to do combat. They're able to do combat, but they also have, like, the tech specialist versus, like, the guy who breaks stuff to get them through things. Like, you know, different ways they're using their specialties to help each other out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's a squad kind of view
on the
war side of things. Well, you know, you are an individual squadron that has your specialties. You know, that's why you were teamed together, like the A-team. That's why you're put together. You all have the things that you're good at to succeed in battle or in combat.
And that's a core of just about any role-playing game.
Every role-playing game.
D&D down.
Yeah.
So taking that, is there a way to kind of twist this and use some of that military organization theory structure to assist non-military type settings?
Well, I think in any game, you're going to have somebody who ends up being the leader of your group. Even if it's not the leader that makes the, you know, we do this, they're going to be the one who talks to people. They're going to be, you know, like the front man of a band. They're going to be, you know, considered kind of the face of that group. And that that directive, you know, person. Well, I guess it comes down to what your group wants to do. If everybody wants to just follow a leader, that could be just fine. And you just make all those decisions if you really want to. But most groups would like a democratic approach. They want to be, you know, involved in that decision process.
Well, in most cases, that's going to just kind of play out in terms of team dynamics.
Okay.
If you don't have a formal rank structure within the characters, you know, a dominant player is probably going to take
center stage
dominance over the others.
Yeah, and that's what I was gonna say. Somebody who's a lot more confident in a role playing setting is naturally just gonna step forward over somebody who's much less confident at
it. Yeah. Which might be different than something where you have more of an artificial rank structure. You might not have your confident character or confident player in that leadership role.
Right.
I guess there's another question that I wanna kinda get to too is, if you are playing a rank structure, what's the best approach for choosing the players for that rank structure?
Kind of depends what you want to do, with your group.
Yeah, and a lot of times, if it comes to that, I'll kind of leave that up to the players.
Yeah.
You know, I'll talk to everybody and go, is anybody confident playing the captain? Do you want to?
Or play? The other side of it, if somebody is that spotlight taker, put the person who's quiet as the captain, because the person who's going to find the spotlight will always find the spotlight.
Those are kind of the two extremes that most role-playing games I've heard have suggested. Yep. Either use that position to help give a lesser player more of a spotlight, or to, you know, like I say, my approach is kind of give a a person who's willing to partially be a game master that position.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And this reminds me of when back in the day when we talked to our friend Ben Patton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was kind of talking about his Star Trek games. And he, you know, in his group, he's got the one player that's kind of always the captain. You know, they're the captain. That's it. You know, so he kind of gives them that because they're good at it, or you know that's kind of what they do as the group. That person just steps forward as the captain. So, you know, it just kind of depends on the group dynamic and kind of pulling that real world thing of, well, who's comfortable doing it,
mm-hmm.
As a role player, as a real person, or if somebody who's not wants to step out of their comfort zone, and try to do that. That's always an interesting thing that I encourage people to do, you know, step out of your comfort zone every once in a while. It's fun. Come on. We're not scary.
you know, it's funny you say that because I ran into a problem with the gaming group I had for quite a while. No one wanted to be captain. Everyone wanted the more flavorful roles of the various
science, heads. Engineering. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we had a hard time because nobody wanted to be captain. You know, no one wanted to be first officer. No one wanted to take that level of responsibility, which is another very interesting, weird dynamic.
Well, I mean, that's a nice thing for a GM if you want to be able to say, hey, this is what the party's going to be doing. And you kind of have the captain NPC stepping in and kind of directing where some of that is. But I think in that situation, if you do that and people are enjoying it, I think you should still upset it from time to time. Oops, that guy got fired. Oh, they're dead, or whatever, you know, and so it constantly has that change and that opportunity for somebody to step up and be like, you know what, I'm tired of being led by this crappy NPC captain, I'm going to do my own thing, and kind of step up into that position of leadership.
Well, Star Trek, you know, like I say, you always have that plot idea of, you're the landing party, go down. Now, still, somebody in that landing party is the ranking officer, somebody is going to be command of that landing party.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you're still going to have that to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if somebody doesn't step forward in a commanding sense, somebody might step forward in a technical skills sense.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
they're good at this thing. So, so then that's a way that they kind of step forward.
Sure.
You know, they feel comfortable stepping forward in that sense.
I think this is a good spot to try and talk about, like, what are some pitfalls and how to do command and commanding in a right way? You know, one very nice way to deal with that, if nobody quite wants to be that commanding officer, but somebody has to be in that situation, you know, you say, hey, you're the person who is responsible for the situation. And then maybe you pull that player aside as the GM and be like, just maybe you're the tiebreaker and just get everybody else to talk. And get them to decide something, and then you just do the final, like, yeah, okay, so two of you are thinking this, and two of you are thinking this, well, we're going to go this direction. And you kind of break that debate between all of the players of what the action should be, but help that player who feels maybe not as confident, you know, saying a direction to go, how they can do that in a way that doesn't feel like they're being, you know, a punk about it to the rest of the team.
Yeah, interesting concept.
True.
Definitely.
I think it's good to make sure that, you know, as the character, you're going to represent your character well. But I think as a player to other players, you maybe continue to check in with your fellow players to be like, hey, I'm not mad at you, even if my character's yelling at you, you know, or whatever. Like, yeah, always kind of communicate outside of what your characters are doing. Take that minute.
Sure. And that's, you know, again, that's basic. Make sure that it's character driven, not player driven, bossing around.
Right.
Well, and it's just good to check in. Like, most, you'll find that when you get into role play situations, you're role playing. You're playing something you're not used to doing. You're playing a different mindset. And so something might spark that you're not used to, and people don't know how to deal with it because they've never experienced it before.
True.
In stories and games and such, you know, that constant, you know, moral dilemmas theme pops up regularly. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, role-playing, in a sense, is a sort of overall emotional experience because, like you said, you're going through things that you don't normally go through from a different person's quote-unquote point of view.
Yeah.
You're role-playing somebody.
Walking a mile in different shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's definitely not uncommon to feel somewhat uncomfortable at times.
Yep.
That's one of the parts of role-playing. You experience these different things in different ways.
And it may be uncomfortable, but it shouldn't be overly uncomfortable. It shouldn't be icky. It shouldn't feel nasty in a way or make you feel unsafe. Uncomfortable is one thing. No, unsafe is a whole absolutely. Other thing where you start to like freeze up or shut down or things just don't feel right and you're not sure what to say about it. Like, those are good signs. Mm. Be aware.
True.
And just say, hey, guys, we need a pause.
Absolutely.
True.
Yeah, and of course, if things ever, get, out of hand for anyone in particular, the X card, of course, is something that everyone should utilize.
Yes, indeed.
If something comes up that anyone is uncomfortable with, the X card can simply be pulled, no questions asked. We drop the situation. We move from there.
And there's some really cool versions of that too, X card and different like colors of like kind of like slow down or stop or change it or whatever else not. There's a lot of good options out there. You just search X card or RPG safety tools. There's a lot of really good resources out there. And if you're still, in that pandemic life, which I think we still will be for a little bit, you're using a digital tool set, or if you just like playing online anyway, there's a lot of good ways to set that up in your game too. So,
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Of course, there's using the soccer or football rules of yellow and red cards.
Yep.
Of course, if things get a little uncomfortable and you need to maybe back off a little bit but not completely stop, there's a yellow card.
Like, let's fade to black here. We don't have to stop it, but let's not linger.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Let's move briskly here. And then, of course, a red card for if things get way too uncomfortable, of course.
Yeah.
And
that's essentially the X card. Yeah.
If only the real military had those.
absolutely. That's part of the pain of having to serve there.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very much so.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, do you have any other kind of final topics here as we round this episode off here?
I think we've done a pretty good job of covering things.
I think we have. Logan?
Yeah, no, I think that's probably good. Talk with your people. Go to the table with the same, ideas and make sure you discuss those ideas and then just embrace the fun of it. It's a game. It should still be a game. Have fun with that rank.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have fun, having somebody who's in command or being in command, make it a fun and light thing.
Yes.
Even if it is a heavy game.
Yeah. And it's kind of finding that balance of bringing that light in through all of the intense moments that come with military related situations. And I know, I'm sorry, we talked about Star Trek a lot, but that's just the closest thing us nerds have to compare to.
Yes.
Well,
that's true.
Especially with modern games, like it's the most common that we'll start out by saying, what rank are you? It's
right.
Built into the character process.
Mm-hmm. That's very true, I think. Yeah. And anything else is just going to be kind of Star Trek like, so that's kind of,
that's the curse. That's the curse we have.
Yeah.
But gentlemen, I think we're gonna wrap up this episode here. Thank you all for joining me today. I had a blast, and I think we will continue on the next episode.
And that's it for this episode of Tabletop Radio Hour. Like always, you can find this episode on SoundCloud.com/TabletopRadioHour and on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at TabletopCast if you have any questions or comments. You can join us over on Facebook.com/TabletopRadioHour for regular updates. We also have an email address that is TabletopRadioHour@gmail.com. Our website, TabletopRadioHour.wordpress.com. You can find information about our Patreon page on our website. I want to thank you all for listening and keep rolling 20s.